When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Pre-roll time. You know the Cheers to Comics podcast is proudly brought to you by Inked Marketing Solutions and the Inked Marketing Solutions crowdfunded comic for this episode. Well, it belongs to Trickster. And it's ending soon, so do not miss out on this amazing special 48-page comic. Once again, brought to you by Inked Publishing. Now, Trickster is a funny, fast-paced horror comedy series. Gotta love a little bit of horror and a little bit of comedy with a whole lot of zoom-zoom. A sometimes dark look at a man, it says in quotation marks. I wonder what they could be implying there. A man who never believed he could be a leader until he finally chooses to become one. Rory is your typical everyday banished leprechaun. Naturally. Ah, man. He runs a bar in Boston and uses his powers of illusion to protect his neighborhood from the thieves of the world. I feel like I'm doing this ad injustice by not having an Irish accent, but unfortunately that's the best it gets for me. Regardless, if they use a gun or a contract as their weapon. When monsters from this homeland begin showing up, Rory realizes that not only are these creatures putting humanity at risk, they're proving disastrous for his drinking time. You see, Rory has a secret. I dig it, man. It's ending on the 13th. This crowd-funded Kickstarter comic ends on the 13th. You gotta head on over to inked.pub/trickster. Once again, that's inked.pub/trickster. And that's, get your hands on a copy of Trickster, 48 pages.
Age of Radio.
Welcome back to the Cheers to Comics podcast. I'm your host, Brian Wayne, and this is episode 357. The 357th episode of the Cheers to Comics podcast will be a creator corner. I'll be cornering a couple of creators here. More specifically, Steve Mardo and Sean French. Now, these guys are part of the team behind Epic Tavern's Tales from the Fantastical Crime Unit coming out from Black Caravan, you know, from Scout. So, good stuff here, people. Good stuff. If you're familiar with the mobile game Epic Tavern, this is for you. If you're not, this is still for you, and we'll get into that in great detail in this amazing conversation that I have with Steve and Sean. But first, before I get into this conversation with Steve and Sean, I gotta tell you all about the newest affiliate of the Cheers to Comics podcast, and that's going to be 307nerdsforever.com. Or, if you're in Newcastle, Wyoming, it's just Nerds Forever. You get that luxury. But if you're not, and more than likely you're not, then head on over to 307nerdsforever.com and experience the best. I'm going to go out on a limb here and just say the best customer service and comic book online retail. Period. And I mean in the store as well, obviously, but just overall, it's amazing customer service. That's why I reached out and said, how about that partnership? And Tarl said yes. And And it's been magic since. But while you're over there, you're not just going to get you know, I'm not going to just say head on over there and check out all of the amazing deals that you're already going to get. You know, them, you find those books on eBay, they're going for fair market value. No, you still get them for cover price over at 307nerdsforever.com quite often. But beyond already getting books discounted from fair market value, use code CHEERS at checkout and save another 10%. Cheers at checkout at 307nerdsforever.com and save 10%. And just experience it, people. Witness it. All right, without any further ado, I bring to you the conversation with Sean French and Steve Marto. All right, Steve and Sean, how are you, fellas?
Doing well, thanks.
Good, man. Good. Steve, I know we were talking in the green room a little bit beforehand. I know you're well, man. I think we're both at the same type of energy level for this. I'm excited. Sean, I hope you're ready, man, because I think we got high energy right now, dude.
Awesome. Yeah, let's do it.
We were saying it's a nice early morning interview, so we are all widely awake, have our coffee, and we're all set.
It's true. Yeah, we did one late last night that you got to kind of get the, you know, that second or third or fourth wind at that point.
To kind of get
yourself ready. This is much easier. I'm actually awake.
You don't have to shake off the day, you know? I mean, I don't know. I dig the morning conversations. I'm liking this, changing things up here. So, guys, before we get into Epic Tavern, I like to hear my origin stories. That's for damn sure. I like to hear where the people that create the things that I love come from, and why comics and all of that amazing stuff. So I want to talk with Steve first, our illustrator, man. Like, when did it's kind of a basic question, but when did comics fall into your life originally?
I always wanted to draw since I was little. I was almost kids that I realized I really wasn't good at anything else but drawing, and that's where I kind of got my, you know, my shine. Was never good at sports or anything, I remember going into like a Walden's Books, and my mom got me, I saw this thing called Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and it was a little trade paperback. It was one of the original trade paperbacks, and I saw it, and I fell in love with it because I've always saw Spider-Man and Batman, stuff like that. But I saw these little like weird kind of chubby turtles, but they were like ninjas. And I was like, oh, I could be that. I'm like a little like fat kid, and I could be like a ninja turtle. And I saw like just how awesome it was, and how like another thing is too, you know, you're younger, like you see the violence and stuff in it, and like they're all like cutting up ninjas and mousers and all this other stuff. So that got me hooked. And then I ended up, I was probably like, I think around 10 or 11. And I got into the, like I said, I always saw the Spider-Man cartoons and the comics. And I never really was a big fan of the style, the old school style. I am now, but when I was younger, I was like, yeah, it looks so like old people draw it. And then I saw the McFarlane Spider-Man number 14, I think it was. And that hit the stands. And I remember my dad took me to a comic book shop, and he was like, I don't know what this is or whatever. And he was wearing the black suit. And I was like, whoa, like this is, I've never seen anything like this before. This is crazy. He's got these crazy webbings. And after that, I was just like, that's what I'm doing for the rest of my life. I want to do comics. And I want to tell stories in this crazy way. That's, you know, totally different and not animation, because animation is very painstaking.
I don't understand how they do it, man. Like it's I don't know. That's a whole other monster right there. But even just illustrating in itself, like it still has its repetitive moments, and yeah, man, just it's painstaking in its own way. But
it's fun though. I there's nothing else I'd rather do, me and Sean talked about this before. I ended up always wanted to do comics. When I got out of high school, I didn't go straight to college. I was like, I'm going to do stuff for Marvel and DC. Like, that's what I'm doing. And I sucked. You know, I was like every other, you know, bright-eyed, you know, 17-year-old coming out of high school thinking I was going to work for Marvel. And I did some years where I did do the convention thing, and I met a lot of like really great like artists and illustrators. And some of the best advice I ever got was from Brian Stelfreeze and Jimmy Palmati, who were like amazing. One of the first people I ever interacted with for creators. And I ended up going back to school in my late 20s, and I ended up going to a school of visual arts for a year. And then I went and got my bachelor's at Mass Art in Boston. And then from there, I basically just hit the ground running, and I have done a lot of illustration work. And I was always doing comics on the side, but illustration work always kind of paid the bills. So I ended up just kind of getting into this place where, I realized I had to kind of do this if I really wanted to, fulfill my needs as an artist. I wanted to really do visual storytelling. And so here I am, and I've done some, some stuff for a lot of independent companies and stuff like that. Then I got hooked up with some people at Scout through Steve Levine, who was the original Ninja Turtles colorist, who's coloring the book. And he hooked us up with Sean and Epic Tavern, and the Fantastical Crimes Unit has turned into what it has. So
that's amazing. Yes, man.
Thank you.
That's so awesome. Did you have encouraging art teachers throughout high school, or were you someone that had to just kind of, did you have to be a rebel artist? Because I know that can be tough sometimes.
I actually had a very awesome art teacher, Miss Pliny. Shout outs. She's probably
right on.
She's probably old and doesn't listen to podcasts now, but doesn't probably know what a podcast is. But she was awesome. She would literally give me passes to go into her class and just draw.
So cool.
She was so, because she really was. She was an awesome art teacher. She was one of the best teachers I ever had. And like, there were some classes that I really didn't like. I would tell her, I don't really like going to this class, and she'd be like, well, you know what? Maybe I'll give you a little pass to say that you're helping me out with the project. And then she would just let me go in there and just let me draw and let me do the stuff I need to do. And so she was a huge, and my parents were very, very supportive. I don't think they knew exactly what it is I was trying to do, but they just knew that I did have talent and that they didn't want me to waste it. So they've always been pretty supportive. Although they were always like, you should get a full-time job and maybe do this as a hobby, but I was always kind of like thick-headed and just kind of was like, no, this is exactly what I'm going to do. So,
and now here you are. I mean, that's the mentality to have for sure.
Taking destiny by the balls, I guess.
Damn fucking straight. Damn straight. Oh man, I love it, man. Sean, I mean, I have to ask you the same question, brother. I mean, when did comics fall into your life? Because I know you're a man of many talents. So comics your first love, or I mean, what?
Certainly an early love. Growing up, the Conan comics in the 80s were super, super influential. I was obsessed with those. That movie came out when I was in middle school, and it just hit at exactly the right time. And I just absorbed every book and comic I could get my hands on for years and years and years and years, and just sucked up that IP as quickly as I could. So those comics were a huge influence on me. In terms of wanting to write comic stories, Mad Magazine was probably a bigger influence than anything else.
Oh, right on, man.
I did spend several years as a stand-up comedy writer. And it was some of the early like movie parody stuff that Mad Magazine did that kind of, I think, lit that fuse for me in terms of wanting to tell stories in a visual medium like that. In terms of getting into making them, I kind of stumbled into it. I had just released a movie called The Wrong House that I wrote and directed. And I had written a follow-up script called Escape from Jesus Island about an attempt to clone Jesus that goes horribly wrong. And I was going to make it as this low budget, like, $10,000 little indie film, full of crazy monsters and stuff. And
awesome. Escape from Jesus Island. The name's just echoing in my head right now. I love it.
So I actually was talking about it with an artist friend, Mortimer Glum, and he convinced me to do it as a comic. He goes, I should actually make a really great comic series. And he had experience with that. I obviously had a lot of experience reading comics, but hadn't worked on one before. So he kind of, you know, was my guide through that process. When we did Escape from Jesus Island, we did 4 issues of that. You know, it was a, you know, we made a ton of rookie mistakes. And it was just a painful, you know, experience that I was like, okay, I'm probably not going to do that again. But then like 10 years goes by and, you know, I started editing comics for Scout, and I edited a lot of the Black Caravan books, you know, so I you know, probably edited 150 comics. And in the back of my head, there's just, you know, I'm studying the art form. I'm learning a little bit more about it. I'm learning how, you know, how it works, and kind of contemplate. There's still this part of me in the back of my head that, okay, can we do it right this time? Now that I actually know what I'm doing, could we, you know, and we saw an opportunity through Scout to adapt Epic Tavern, which is the video game I write for a living for Hyperkinetic Studios, into a comic series put out through Black Caravan, who I was already editing through. And bringing Steve on board was the final big piece of the equation, you know, because again, I write in a lot of different mediums. I'm not a dedicated comics guy. I love comics, but it's really important that I have a knowledgeable guide to bring me through it. And the first time through it was Mortimer Glom, and this time through it's Steve Marco, who's really been kind of, you know, I know that if I give him a great story and give him these kind of iconic characters and good visual components to work with, he's going to put it together in a way that is better than I could have conceived of. Yeah. So we do this kind of back and forth, you know, bouncing ideas and developing, you know, the look and the feel and the flow of it together, which has just been a great experience.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, when you bring on somebody that, you know, is that dedicated to the world of comics, you know, it's going to do justice to that type of storytelling, and it's going to make the process so much easier. So that's awesome that you guys found each other and made this story happen. I'm listening to your story, and I mean, you edited for Scout Comics. You wrote and directed a movie. I mean, I think I even read in your bio something you didn't mention. You've acted as monsters in movies. I mean, you wrote stand-up like that. I mean, the writing stand-up thing, that's something I hold to one of the right up there with, I mean, if not even a little bit further than comic book creating. I mean, that's the standard for me. Writing comedy is, that's, I couldn't imagine make the funny. Writing it is.
Well, to be fair, I'm of the age, I'm 50 years old, that I was a teenager during the comedy boom, when it was contractually obligated that you had to do stand-up comedy. Every human in the country had a 5-minute set. It was just a thing. Every bar did stand-up, where they now do like karaoke or other things. Every little bar had a stand-up night. There was comedy everywhere. So, you know, in terms of looking for any sort of path to express yourself creatively, coming up at that time, comedy was just like a really good path, you know. And I was bad at it for 6 years and good for one, and then stopped. You know, that's
kinda... Yeah, I mean, quit while you're ahead, man.
The Jerry Seinfeld thing, you know.
Yeah. You're right off into the sunset, man. I love it. I mean, you create video games as your main source of living, and you're doing Epic Tavern, and then in your head you have this other storyline, I would imagine, and then somehow Scout comes into the equation, and Scout brings in Steve, or did you guys find each other and go to Scout with this? What's the process of bringing all this together?
Yeah, well, Joe Schmalke over at Black Caravan, who makes the Electric Black, We Don't Kill Spiders, you know.
Murder Hobo, all of them.
Joe books. Makes a ton of great books. I edited all
Joe
of Joe's
sleep.
Yeah, I edited all of Joe's stuff. And and that's been the case for several years now. And I kind of had a standing offer or a standing interest from him that if I wanted to do another series, he would certainly give that a, you know, real consideration about picking it up. And finally, after kind of sitting on the sidelines with this great view of seeing how all these titles were performing and the number of variant covers that they're able to get with store exclusives, and I was like, okay, you know, I I think I see it. I think I see an actual opportunity here that, that we can do this with very minimal risk and create something to kind of expand our intellectual property in a really cool way and create this new adventure, you know, kind of built out of some of the characters and storylines from Epic Tavern that we love. And we kind of pounced on that. Joe recommended Steve Murdo right out of the gate. That was his first recommendation. And then I did about, you know, probably 6 to 8 weeks of due diligence, examining different artists and putting together portfolios. And we kind of went through everything and ended up where I started, that yeah. Steve's look was what we wanted for the book. It was just perfect.
That's incredible, man. I love it. It's amazing how it all works out just in that. What's really has me excited here is on top of all of this, you guys are breaking more ground at Scout, because I don't think they've done a video game book yet. I don't know if they've done any properties at all based off of a video game. So, and we see how successful that is at Dark Horse. That's where all of Dark Horse's money is in their, they're hardcover video game graphic novels. And I mean, Scout bringing in something like this, a mobile game that's accessible to everybody. Damn near. I don't know, man. I think that this is just one more major building block in making Scout the ultimate comic book monster that they are becoming. So I mean, this is really exciting to see all of this come together in this type of way.
Yeah, and we're hoping to see more of that down the line too. I work for Hyperkinetic Studios, which is a game development studio formed by senior designers from Treyarch, who worked on like the PlayStation 2 era Spider-Man games.
Oh, cool.
So they kind of get sick of the studio system and they got to kind of, you know, start up something and do it their own way without all the grind and the beatdown that the industry is famous for. So it was just a perfect environment and finding Steve, who fits the Hyperkinetic kind of mindset and, you know, it's the flow and the way we like to do things has been perfect. He's become just a member of the greater team now.
Yeah. Steve, what's that like getting brought onto a property like this, man? I mean, did you have any idea something like this was coming? I mean, how did you know Joseph in order to, I mean, for him to recommend you like this?
Well, we kind of met through Steve Levine. I met Steve Levine.
Okay.
At a show, I was tabled next to him and I was just kind of like fangirling because it was like, oh, I got one of the guys that, you know, made me, you know, help me start my career path and what I wanted to do. And he liked my artwork a lot. And we ended up doing a couple of jam pieces together, which was also just amazing. It's just like that bucket list. And
one of those pieces is what made me want the two of them as a team. Yeah. We did.
I did a commission for my mind's just going blank now. What was it for? Was it not the Daredevil? It was the Daredevil, Sean?
Or
was
it Jumbo? I think it was.
Oh yeah, Usagi Jumbo commission, and I handed it over to Steve. I said, he was like, oh, I love this. Can I color it? And I was like, yeah, go for it. And then that's the one that I guess they showed Sean, and that's the one that kind of clicked. But what happened was, there's this whole kind of crew. I'm in Rhode Island. They're all in Maine. Through the Granite State Convention, I met Joe and Steve, and we just kind of all kind of, you know, I wasn't like meeting Joe off the gate. It was kind of like after a few shows, we kind of met and I showed him my artwork and I kept talking to him, and he was telling me that he was working on some books and stuff like that. And he said, yeah, he goes, you got great work. And, you know, if anything comes my way, I'll give you a recommendation. And I ended up doing some variant covers for Murder Hobo. And then I ended up doing a 6-page backup story in Chaotic Neutral. And from there, he was like, I think something's coming my way that you might be perfect for. He's like, you know, are you going to be, is your schedule open? And I was like, yeah, you guys have been awesome to me. Like, yeah, whatever you want, I'll jump in on it. And immediately when I met with Sean, we just like clicked, like everything just clicked. And the story, the characters, the mindset of Hyperkinetic and Sean and the kind of attitude they have towards everything is very like, they have like a really good free range, like idea zeitgeist going on in there. And they're just amazing, amazing people. And it was great because the stuff I was sending over was just like, you know, I'm not tuning my own horn, but everything I sent over was just a home run with them. And I was like, something's got to be up here. Cause like everything I'm sending in, nobody's got any problems with, like, I don't have to change anything. And it was very, very minimal things that I had to change. And that's when I said, wow, I was kind of like, okay, this is like a nice little tribe to be a part of. And ever since then, I mean, I've been working on the book for a while now, since the beginning of 21. And every step of the way has just been nothing but a great experience. And Sean's writing is just amazing too. I think the book, you know, I know that we've given people just the preview, but what we have set up in the first issue is just amazing writing. There's so much in there, and it's tailored so well. I haven't really read a script like that in a while, that really kind of really gets the characters. That's the other thing too, that these characters, they're not just characters that are made overnight. These are characters that have an actual past. I mean, they've been working
a following.
I've been writing for years. Yeah. There's like fanfic already of the characters in our comics, but that's been out for years from people who play the game.
Sean. Yeah, they've been working on this game for 4 years. So it's not like they just kind of like said, "Oh, we're gonna make this character that character and throw them in there." These are fully realized characters, and I think that's what kind of attracted me to the script, is that you could actually, you know, feel what these characters are thinking and the actions that they're doing in the comic, you know, their motives and everything like that. And I don't know, from there, it's snowballed. And I don't know, me and Sean, I think we got something really special here. And I know everybody says that about their books and stuff like that, but I really feel like me being put on the book was just, I don't know, it's just like, it's very serendipitous, like just how crazy it happened.
And you mentioned, you know, us liking everything you sent. And I think this is a thing that, a trap that writers get into sometimes, is in comics especially. I had a lot of comics. I see a lot of different approaches to scripts. And I think writers often get too locked into an original vision that they have for how everything should look and feel, and then try to make an artist draw what they see in their head. And that's not a recipe for success. That's really not. No. So I try to keep, I don't form specific visual views on a lot of things. I know the essence of the character. And if the image that Steve sends me captures the essence of the character, even if the character looks different than I had maybe pictured a little bit, I'm just like, yes, that's exactly it. And by doing that, it lets him lets him tap into his own creativity and his own interests and what he does best, and bring that out instead of trying to, you know, recreate the exact thing that I've described in exacting detail. You know, it's like the lobby scene. We've got a double splash page in the first issue that has the lobby of the Fantastical Crimes Unit, where there's like 150 characters, just total chaos and bedlam and everything. The script mentions about 7 characters. It mentions that it's a chaotic scene. Here are some of the things that could be happening. You know, and boom, just some examples. And obviously, had I tried to describe that scene and draw this, and I want this to be this thing and this thing, it would have been a nightmare. But by leaving an open canvas for him and just saying, these are some cool things that, you know, that would be fun to have in there and go nuts with it, we ended up with this crazy, you know, spectacle that, he ended up drawing this double splash page on 8 11 by 17 pages so he could fit all the detail he wanted. It's a 44 by 34 original artwork for this double splash.
Jesus.
And that's that insane. And it was a result of me not trying to get overly specific. That's entirely what led into it. Is I just let him, gave him the freedom to do what he wanted with it, and he chose to go crazy with it, and we got something great. If I had tried to control that scene and make it exactly the way I'd envisioned it when I wrote the script, it would have been a far lesser end result.
Well, what are you thinking when you get those beats, Steve? When you get this order for the splash page, you know, like, here's a couple of ideas. What's going through your head? Are you thinking I need to take this to the, you know, or above and beyond what was given? Do I need, I mean, like, what's, I don't, because that it's insane what you did.
Thank you. don't tell that to Steve Levine, our colorist, because he's when he saw it, he was not that thrilled. but he endured, and I think he did an amazing job with it.
We did pay it as 8 pages of art, which it actually was, rather than 2 as well. So that helped lessen the hit a little bit.
Yeah, I was joking the other day about that. But yeah, no, they're hyper. I'm really happy that they even. I mean, most places would not even consider doing that. Right. I probably still would have done it, but you know, most places they don't do that. I don't know. I try to hold a certain quality to my work, and I think with this, because they let me just go crazy and everything was hitting the mark, it made the work environment that much more. It's like going to an amusement park. What am I going to do here? What am I going to do there? And everything is working and everything's, you know, hitting the right mark. So when Sean was giving me these kind of, I wouldn't say they weren't vague, because not everything in the script is vague. But when he gave me the license to kind of go and do what I had to do, he was just like, yeah, like just go crazy. And it's funny because I am very much, I love comics and I love the art of comics. Like, I love the art of storytelling. And I know that I kind of contradict myself, because I do teach a class sometimes and I tell them that, you know, story is everything. It doesn't matter how well you can draw. As long as you can tell a good story, that's what matters. And then they see my artwork and there's like a million trillion things going on. But
look at all of this drawing.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, yeah, it's like say as I do, not as I hear. You know, say as, yeah. I forgot that.
I know what you're saying, brother.
Yeah. Anyway, so first of all, the script was just really good. It was just a very, very good script. And when I read through it, I just visualized everything while I was reading it. And everything just kind of clicked. And the other thing is too, is that one of the things I were always talking about with Sean was that when originally he sent me over bios of the characters, he, you know, very, very, he did this great move where he would put a little visual. So he'd tell you the character and the main character, Victor Marshall, who's the, like, the hard-boiled detective guy in it. He sent all these images of, you know, Humphrey Bogart and stuff like that. And then he sent one of Leslie Nielsen from the Naked Gun movies and stuff. And I was like, all right, this is where we're going. I get exactly,
exactly.
I get exactly where he wants to take this. And then from there, even the other characters, even a lot of the other characters in the story, he kind of, you know, had these little, I gotta say, that was probably one of the best things that as somebody getting a script as an artist, that was just an amazing little tidbit to have.
Let me actually explain the technique for writers who are wondering, because I've never done it before. This is the first time I've done it. I think it's super effective. When I'm doing character breakdowns, at the very top of each character section is I do a little pictograph that I'll pick four famous characters. And it is, you know, like Amelia Martellus, who's the animal loving necromancer who only reanimates animals in the story, is a combination of Snow White, Dot from Animaniacs, Drusilla from Buffy, and what was the I forget the fourth
Lydia.
One.
Is it Lydia Deetz?
Was it Wednesday Addams, maybe?
No, Wednesday.
One of the two.
Man.
But what it does is it lets you, just at a quick glance, capture the vibe of the character.
Yeah.
And when I'm picking those images, I'm not thinking aesthetics at all. I'm not thinking visual. I'm not thinking it should look like these. You should draw it to look like these four characters. I'm picking the vibe of the image of that character. And it is a crazy effective way to give you a feel for who that person is at just the fastest glimpse possible. As a writer, sometimes the instinct is to try and solve things with a mountain of words. And it can be counterintuitive to go the other way, but it's like way more effective.
And I think as an artist, that's what also really gave me that nice little push with these characters, is not trying to figure out, you know, sometimes as an artist, you want to kind of, you know, gorilla the project and make it all yours. But as we were talking about before, it's kind of a give and take. And that just was a real big help. And I think if you didn't do that, there probably would have been a little more back and forth than we had. But I think that that just really solidified a lot of the story and characters and the vibe of the whole book. So, yeah.
I dig it, man. Once again, I really do love how this just all perfectly came together. I mean, the way you guys work together and the way you collab and you try and new methods of, you know, I don't know, man, this is the perfect storm of a new creativity right here, man. This is amazing. Tales from the Fantastical Crime Unit. That's the actual title of the story, right?
Yeah.
So now you'll have to forgive my ignorance. I haven't played a video game outside of Injustice and I don't know how long. But that's only because it was a comic book game. I've got nothing against video games. I just got all of my time into comics right now. So you'll have to forgive my ignorance when I ask, I mean, where does the Fantastical Crime Unit fall within the world of Epic Tavern for people that may be into the game and are slightly into the game or whoever your audience may be from here?
Yeah, the comic is designed to stand on its own. So you don't have to know the game exists to enjoy the comic. You don't have to, you know, they're designed to be their own thing. But the comic is built out of characters and locations and storylines. Basically, you know, we've got 4 years full time that I've been writing in the story world, building the story world. So I've got this mountain of material behind me. So when we decided to make a comic, it was just a question of kind of sifting through that mountain and saying which storylines are going to fit the comic form best. So you're not shoehorning something in as a straight adaptation of it. Mm-hmm. What pieces can I build something new out of that is the perfect shape for a comic series? So I kind of went through and, you know, we've got 160 playable heroes in Epic Tavern, and I picked the five that are going to be, you know, the main characters in the comic. And that process alone was like a, you know, that's a huge decision.
160 playable characters.
Yeah.
That's crazy, man. I mean, that's the type of shit that makes me want to pull out my phone and download a video game. Like that's not the type of stuff. The options I got when I played video games, 160 characters, and then you got to choose five. I mean, yeah.
Well, the funny thing is for all those characters in the game, every one of them has a backstory of at least 10 parts that unfolds as you get to know them. So just the amount of writing I've done in this game, just novels and novels and novels and novels.
Wow.
So I had all of these great pieces to pick from. I didn't have to come up with anything. It was just combing through and finding all of my favorite things from years of writing to you know, build something new and cool with. And, you know, it was important to us that both stand on their own. You don't need to enjoy them, but that if you experience both, that the experience is greater than the sum of its parts. And one of the ways we do that is through some integration. Each of the 10 covers of the comic comes with an in-game reward. On the inside cover is instructions for what you need to do in Epic Tavern to unlock that.
That is
unlock that item. And it's all those items are a reference to the store that you bought that exclusive cover from.
No shit.
Yeah, so I designed all the items for Epic Tavern. So I just let the store owners come up with what they wanted for the in-game reward, and then I built it for them in the game.
That is so cool, man. I mean, because yeah, on top of that, it's, I mean, I would imagine that's given some shining some light on some comic book shops within the game.
Right.
I mean, exactly.
And it encourages our players to go, you know, collect the various covers so they can get the in-game rewards too. And we also just entirely for fun, we built a kind of transmedia puzzle into both the comic and the game. So the comic book is the key to unlocking a secret ending to the main storyline of the game. And there's a series of clues that you can follow from the comic into the game that'll tell you where to look in the comic to find the next clues for what to do in the game to unlock it. So it's this kind of just fun, you know, it's a thing where you don't, it's not required. You don't have to have the book to enjoy the game. You don't have to have the game to enjoy the book. But if you enjoy that crossover, there's some real depth in terms of how you can kind of play not just the game, but the comic, and have a lot of fun kind of bouncing back and forth, investigating on your own.
See, that's brilliant marketing as well as just and groundbreaking storytelling as well. I mean, I love what you're doing, man. That's incredible stuff. I mean, I've never heard of anything like this. You know, even Batman Fortnite, I think they had like their little downloadable code or whatever. But I mean, I'm not reading that because I didn't play Fortnite. With this, I didn't play Epic Tavern. But I mean, for one, it's got the Black Caravan logo on it, so I won't pick it up. But just reading the preview here, it doesn't feel like I need to have played the game at all to understand these characters in any way, shape, or form. Like it's a comic book. I mean, that's what it is.
It was a conscious choice to not call the comic Epic Tavern.
Yes.
We didn't want it to be a thing where someone looks at it and goes, oh, that's a game adaptation. I don't play that game. It's not for me.
Yep.
We wanted to completely avoid that and have it be, you know. Well, also, I mean, every medium is wildly different. And the best storyline for Epic Tavern is not necessarily going to be the best storyline for a comic. And if you try and shoehorn it in and do a straight adaptation, that's not great either. You're really better off envisioning something new for that medium that's built to take advantage of it. And the puzzle thing, we'd actually, Sword Quest on the Atari is the only other instance I know of where there was a game and a comic that had a puzzle between them. Mm. But Sword Quest's fatal flaw is that neither the game nor the comic were any good. They weren't enjoyable on their own. They were just they were vessels to deliver the puzzle. And the puzzle was kind of fun, but neither stood on its own really as a enjoyable experience. So avoiding that trap and making sure that the comic was not just a gimmick for a puzzle, you know, or just an advertising thing. That was
just
important.
Like Batman Fortnite. Like I don't mean to shed any type of shade on the people that made the comic, but as far as, you know, what DC did there, I mean, that's the people. I don't know anybody that's read the fucking book. Everybody just wanted the little square thing in there to get their skins. I mean, it's Fortnite players buying this book. Comic book readers are not buying this book.
Yeah.
And that's the difference. And this is, I don't know, man. When you compare the two, like I'm sitting here going, oh, Batman Fortnite, and then, you know, an Epic Tavern Scout book. I think the Scout book has a million times more potential. I do, just because people are going to want to pick up the fucking sequel. You know, because I mean, you clearly have enough content to keep going with this. So if that were the instance, people are going to want to pick this up. The first Batman Fortnite issue, sure, everybody went crazy for the first issue, but my shop has like 200 copies of number 2, 3, 4, and 5 still sitting on their shelf because they realize it was a gimmick. It wasn't
right. That's the tricky balance. Is when you want to do something that's kind of cool, like the puzzle and stuff, it's very important that you not let that define you and overshadow the work itself.
Yes.
You know, or not let that creatively control the work even worse. You're just telling the story as a way to do the puzzle. And that's not, No, that's not a good approach.
And to be honest, you know, like we were talking about before about the, you know, being a black caravan label, is that, you know, I said this recently, that Joe and Rich, who are heading Black Caravan, they want quality. Like, they're not just gonna crap out just whatever is going to be popular or whatever, you know, whatever's going to sell. They want, you know, they want it to be good. And, you know, I think Sean, you even said it, you've had books that come across that were like, oh yeah, this is good. But then you're like, they were like, no, because they're very picky as to what they want on their label. Mm-hmm. And that's true, because I think it's indicative to them as creators as to what they want to put out. And I personally, you know, I trusted Joe when Joe said this is like a video game thing. And I know Joe is, you know, he can curate very well. And for what he wanted, I was never like, oh, well, this isn't going to work. I said, Joe's going to pick this, you know, handpick this and say, this is going to work for their label. I knew it was going to be quality, and it was like right out the gate. So, I don't know, those guys, they just have a really good vibe, and they really kind of know what's going on. But yeah.
Yeah, no, the title of, you know, just Scout in general, it's so suiting for what they are, because they're not just everybody gets. I mean, they're a talent scout company. They only want quality, and that's why I'm so fixated on everything they do, is because I've yet to be disappointed. And even if Scout has put something out that wasn't for me, that doesn't mean it wasn't good. It just means it wasn't for me. I mean, there's an audience for every single thing they put out, from Stanley the Snowman to Murder Hobo. I mean, that's
a crossover that needs to
happen. That's
Stanley the Murder Hobo.
There you go.
Well, you know, that sounds like fun. It sounds like a lot of fun. But I mean, it's just to know that they chose this to be allowed, and I say that word allowed, to have the Black Caravan logo on it. I mean, it says a lot, because I mean, I've been reading Scout since Scout's been putting out comics, and I get damn near every single thing they put out. And I, like I said, I just, this looks like so much fun. I cannot wait to see what this looks like colored. I mean, I didn't even dawn on me reading this ash can that there's going to be color on. And this, anybody that listens to this podcast know that I have a hard time with just grayscale comics. But with this, I breezed through this, and then I was like, oh shit, there's not even color yet. So I mean, it just makes me that much more excited. Knowing
that lobby, have you seen the lobby scene colored? That double splash page
not colored? No,
oh, we'll send that over to you. Woo.
Oh,
it's,
man.
Madness.
Yeah.
Madness.
He's got that gun. He's not still working on that.
Oh, no, we've already
been working on it for a while. He would send me messages and be like, I'm still working on this little guy. Why did you make this guy? Now I didn't even he would start, because he colored literally every character in the lobby scene. So he would just find people he forgot were there. And you'd be like, oh shit, I almost forgot this guy. And then, you know, Steve, so man, he doesn't sound like that. He's not a grumpy old man. But he was like, you know, there's this guy that I totally missed near, you know, the dragon's tail or whatever. And now I got to call this guy. He's like another one I forgot to, another one I didn't see. So like this, yeah, we have a whole, it's like a Where's Waldo meets.
That's exactly what was going through my head, man, was Where's Waldo? I just don't know what I'm looking for, because it's all of it is just a sight to behold. It's all just, there's so much going on, and it's all so interesting. And
yeah, I love the juxtaposition where we're coming from the page turn, where the opening is this classic kind of gritty noir. You know, he's like Victor Marshall's trying to be so cool and the contained detective, and then as soon as he opens the door, just carnage.
Yeah.
It's complete bedlam. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, it really does set the mood for the book. I mean, it lets you know that this is, yeah, I mean, you're going to have fun. Anything can happen. And I don't know, man, it's just all of this. It sounds like so much fun. The way you guys marketed this, like I said, if this would have, you know, come through as Epic Tavern, Tales from the Fantastical Crime Unit, I don't know. I mean, I might not have been as inclined to open it up because I would have associated with a mobile app game. But no. I mean, after reading the comic, and I'm not just saying this, after reading the comic and you saying that there's over 160 playable characters and all of this stuff, I really am inclined to open this game up and just see what the hell it's about. You know, because it seems like a lot of fun. And I mean,
second issue, we have even more stuff. Like we're working on the second issue right now. And it's crazy. Like we were so happy with the first issue. But the second issue is just, it's not going to be one of those things where it's, you know, the first issue is good and then the second issue kind of goes down. It's actually upping a lot of things. And we're even going to, like, you know, do a lot more, maybe a lot more characters. But there will be something along those lines, I think, in the next one. Because I do want to have that kind of, I want there to be something in a book, because nothing frustrates me more than when you get a first issue and it's drawn beautifully, and then you get the rest of the issues and they're just like
it can be tough. You can almost hear the clock of the deadline when you're reading the subsequent issues and watching the quality drop. And you know, that was the difference between the first one. We had as much time as you want to kind of get it together and everything.
Yeah, you and got then the you pitch ones, the pilot.
Start working on deadline as things start.
I think it's something a lot of readers don't necessarily understand. And I mean, a lot of times the first issue is done or near done when it comes time, you know, to say this is what I have to the publisher. But when they say I like it, I want more. I mean, you don't have that entire lifetime building up to that. Now you just got to do everything you just did again in 30 days or 60 days or whatever the deadline is.
Yeah, the way I always like to refer to it is the Saw phenomenon is how I think of it. That the first Saw movie came out and it was this, you know, indie film that made a ton of money and it was this giant hit and it was this one-off. They made the short film and they decided to make a feature version and there we made it and that was good. And then it became this monster hit and several months after they'd wrapped production and now it's out, the studio's like, okay, we need another one for next Halloween.
Yeah.
And they have no script. They're not planning to do it. Yeah. So now they've got to cobble together a script that they can go into production on 6 weeks from now so they can get it out by next Halloween, and then that one does well and suddenly they need another one for the next Halloween, and now they're building extensions onto a house with no plans, you know, that they're now seven extensions into this house that was supposed to be a standalone, and it just starts getting more rickety and out of control, and the, you know, the foundations are cracking and
because it just wasn't, going to space
it wasn't built for that. Chasing in space.
And then, and then you take out the emergency button, which is Chris Rock.
Yeah, when in doubt.
They're like, we need Chris Rock
in case of emergency.
In case of emergency, Chris Rock out of there. I don't know. Yeah, that was a weird. I don't.
But I didn't make it that far into the. Into the phenomenon, let's put it that way.
Congratulations.
I'm proud of that. I'm real proud of that.
So you didn't have to.
yeah. But I like that you learn from other people's mistakes, and you know, I'm excited to see where you guys go. I don't feel like this is a series that's, you know, I use the term dropping a deuce. The first issue is awesome. The second issue takes a big old dump.
I've never heard that term. That's great.
And it's, but I don't feel like that's here. Like, I feel like judge it a lot based off of the artist's enthusiasm a lot of time. You don't seem burnt out. And that's what gets me excited. I mean, anybody in their right mind would fucking be burnt out after this issue, dude. And here you are seemingly just as excited to talk about drawing the second issue and continuing to take the storyline further. And that gives me all the indications in a solid series, not just a nice preview. You know,
I mean, so the important difference is Steve's not drawing my story. He's drawing our story.
Yes,
we're crafting this thing together. It's not that he's following a set of orders and grinding through work. He's creating a thing himself.
Yeah, no, and that'll definitely slow down any signs of burnout. That's for damn sure. You know,
and it's kind of like that Jack Kirby thing where he was kind of like, I remember there's that quote from him saying, "You haven't found what you like to draw." And, you know, I think that's what kind of, not that I'm anywhere near that kind of artist, but it seems like if you look at his life and things that he was creating, he was making the stuff, everything he wanted to is basically the stuff he wanted to draw. And I mean, everybody at first, when they're an artist and they first start out, you have to, you know, take your L's and you have to kind of just, you know, be a hired hand. But I think, you know, like I said, when we started working on this, they just let me, that you want to draw monsters, you want to draw weird looking golem guys sliding around on jellyfish, go for it. Like it does, you know, it doesn't matter. You know, you want to draw like, you know, a passed out mouse on a staircase, go for it. So they weren't, you know, over my shoulder telling me, don't draw that weird stuff, it's too weird, don't draw that, or, you know, draw it this way. They were just like, yeah, go do what you want to. And that, I think, really, that really gets your creative juices going. And I think too, also, you know, Sean being the writer he is very flexible. And I know that one of the main things too, that me and Sean kind of went over, is that he does like a second pass after it's done, just to kind of like make sure. Yeah.
Well, it's the editor,
in him. Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's actually way more extensive than that. I think it's a really overlooked opportunity in a lot of comics that writers don't do, is when pages come back, the first thing I do is put placeholder letters on them. That nobody but me is going to see these letters. We'll bring someone on to actually do the real ones. But the
Rob
first
Jones,
thing I do,
shout out.
Rob Jones, who's awesome. But the first thing I do is put the words on the page, see how they look, move them around, change stuff. I'll spend weeks rewriting after the artwork comes in, just moving things around and adding little caption bubbles and just fine tuning. And I do a ton of that. I mean, the rewrites are they're little changes, but I make a lot of them before it goes to lettering. And I think a lot of books, the pages come back and then they just send the script along with the artwork to lettering without even considering, after seeing the artwork and the layout of the pages and the panels, is there anything that I didn't envision when I wrote the initial script that I should consider now before locking in the words? And the answer is obviously yes. On every page, the answer is going to be yes. And if you just assume these are my words, I wrote the script, this is put those on there and we're done, you're really missing an opportunity to make your work.
And the ego on you is, I mean, to think that it's the first draft is, you know, the thing that's, I don't know. But you know, it's not uncommon at all that's a standard for a lot of titles out there. Like I'm not going to name any titles out there, but this particular new comic book day, there was two or three instances. I was like, was there no editor? I mean, what, and like I said, I'm not going to name names by any means, but they're clearly somebody didn't reread their own work, you know? And it's to know that, I mean, as a reader myself, to hear the creator talk about how important it is to go through and fine tooth all of that stuff. I know I've heard writers before with the mentality of, you know, just don't overthink it, but this is your
crazy
fucking
talk.
Don't overthink the shit out of it, man.
Right.
Like
this is
your baby. This is your art. You know, this isn't Jackson Pollock. You know, you're not just throwing shit at a fucking thing and just hoping that everything comes together. No, this is a comic book. This is a different kind of art. You need to have 100% investment in every single goddamn corner of every panel.
And yeah,
it's so important.
You look at the artwork. You see the detail work that Steve puts in. You see the thought that he's putting into every panel. To do less than that as a writer is disrespectful.
Yeah,
you really need to.
Thank you.
You need to go through it the same way an artist does, and you know, dig into your own words and tear things apart and examine them and decide. It's not even a question of if, it's a question of in what ways can I now improve this story that I couldn't before it was drawn. there are always ways, because there are new opportunities once you see, you know, how the words look on the page.
I would imagine.
And letterers complain a lot too, that people use lettering as the first draft, that they'll send the script off and then they get the lettering back and then they have a ton of changes because they don't like how it looks on the page. That's disrespectful to your letterer too. You should solve all those problems before you bring the pro in. Don't waste their time laying out a page that isn't going to be right. You should do that yourself first. Make those mistakes. Realize what you did wrong. Correct everything. Readjust the script so it now reflects all the changes you've made to it. And send that to your letterer so the first draft is the correct one.
I would imagine that mentality that you have comes a lot from writing comedy bits, man, because you can't just like write down a joke and the first time it's going to be funny. Like, there's so many things to a joke that makes it perfect.
The honing, honing over years.
Oh, the tone, like the pitch in a single word, like the delivery. I mean, there's such a science to writing comedy that is just so fucking far beyond me that I'll never be able to understand, but I do understand that it's there.
And well, it's interesting, actually, the era that I came up in particular. Now, stand-up comics, the kind of thing is you do a new hour every year and then you throw it away and move to the next one. But when I was coming up, that wasn't the case. And a comic would build their hour and they would tour with that for 20 years. There was this thing that would happen in Boston, especially. I mean, Kenny Rogerson, I think, is still doing the same set he's been doing for 25 years. And it's every second of it is honed to a razor's edge because he's been fine tuning it for decades. And just every pause is exactly right. And modern comedy is more the crank out more new material and stuff like that. But I came up in the era where you worked a joke for years, you know, and you just over and over and over, and you sand down the rough edges and you find the way to perfect it.
Yeah.
I think that was a useful practice.
Yeah, no, it's nice to see that reflecting into comics. You know, it's a standard that I would like to see more. Tell all your comedy writing friends to come in and write comics. It changed the whole goddamn game, man.
I think the other thing is too is that it's an indie book. We have that luxury, and I think, you know, unfortunately with the big two, you're working in this big machine. You're in this machine.
Yeah, but it's such this big machine. It's such this tiny little sandbox. Yeah,
and I mean, I'm not saying that you don't have to put in quality. I'm not saying that you have to put out crap all the time. But I think with independent books, as we've seen in the last few decades, you get people don't mind. That's another thing too. People don't mind, you know, waiting around for an extra month for a book if it's going to be a quality book. If you're putting out something that's worth its, you know, $5 or whatever ticket, you know, price tag. I think people don't mind that. I think that was the thing that people were afraid of. I know growing up, that was like one of the things that in a lot of independent books, people were worried about that. But I think now you can find an audience. If you can find an audience, people who are really willing to, are going to stick out that journey with you. And there are in any genre of comic. And if you're putting out the quality, they're going to know it. They're going to know, you know, people can smell the bullshit. They know when it's not good. And I think the best thing about what we're doing is that, you know, if you can't tell, we're both very excited for this book and we're very passionate about it. And I think we hope that kind of comes out in what we're putting out. And I think it does. So,
yeah. Yeah, no, you could see the excitement throughout the pages, man. You can read the excitement in the script. It's there. These characters have clearly been worked to perfection. I mean, they've been molded into the ultimate comic book characters at this point. And I don't know, man. Like I said, I'm excited for everything you guys are doing. For what you're getting ready to do with Scout. Like I said, being the first video game IP coming into this publisher, it's going to be big. It really is. It's trailblazing, guys. This is I'm so excited for you.
Thank you.
This is amazing. I can't wait to see this thing and all of its 22-page glory, 24-page glory, whatever.
26-page glory.
26-page glory. I knew you guys were going to fucking take it to another goddamn level. Oh, man. And with all of the beautiful colors, I can't wait to see it all, man. When is the first issue due?
October 27th, I believe.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, not far away now at all.
Yeah, and right around the Halloween time, we get that nice. Yeah. They did us really well. They kind of, you know, put us in a nice spot for this. So I think that was really nice, really, you know, accommodating of Scout too.
Hell yeah. What are some of the shops doing exclusives on this?
Let me pull up the list so I don't miss anybody.
It's so awesome what you guys are doing to like build it into the game at the same time to give notoriety to the shops. Like, that's another, just, I keep using the term groundbreaking. I feel like I'm overusing it now, but at the same time, I feel like I'm using it perfectly because that's what the hell you guys are doing. Like, the things that nobody else is doing.
And Sean's been very hands-on too. You know, Sean and I, we're trying to be hands-on with the shops, you know, and it's not just going to be one of these things where we pump out, you know, you pump out one of those like spam emails and it's like, do you want your shop to be part of our comic book? And then we just paste on, you know, you cut and paste something on into the book. Mm-hmm. We're doing something that is literally, you know, crafted for that shop, which I think is really special. You know, I think that was Sean. I think that was your idea, Sean. And that was just, I think that was
giving them just an in-game reward is just like a little thanks for ordering the variant covers is kind of fun. So the stores we've got and some of the covers we have for Hyperkinetic Studios, we decided to get our own variant cover that we get Scott Koblish from Deadpool and a million other things to do a Grisilla Marasucker cover that we love so much. It came out so good. Izzy's Comics and Galahad got a cover by Clint Kaiser. ECGC got a wraparound cover by Enzo Garza that's really cool. Basically Enzo did his take on our lobby scene. So he did this big chaotic wraparound. Yes. It's wonderful.
I love it.
Jetpack Comics got a cover by Rich Woodall. CBSN got a cover by Marto and Levine. We did an Atari variant cover that's made to look like the adventure cartridge from the old Atari one. Coast City Comics got a cover by Steve Levine. Big Pete's Collectibles got a cover by John Gallagher. That's really cool.
Amazing.
So we've got a bunch of, we've got a bunch of them coming.
That's so awesome, man. That's so awesome. And it's not just a couple of shops that you incorporated into this too. I mean, it's like a half a dozen. I mean, that's, if not more, I lost count. It's so cool. It really
10 is. 10 total covers. Yeah.
Oh, shit. Hell yeah, man. Oh, this book is going to catch fire, guys. It is. I mean, it's going to have a lot of eyes on it. I mean, it's just brilliant the way you're doing it all. I mean, you're going to have the video game players into it. I already think that the trend of comic readers now playing the video game, this guy, it might already be starting, man. Like I said, it's not very often I have I don't know, it just seems cool. Is this a all ages game or rated teen and up? Or I mean, I would imagine
the game's all ages.
It is. Awesome. Cool.
Well, one of the things obviously there's graphic components and, you know, and that sort of thing, but the storytelling itself, all the quests and stuff is text. So what we found is, there are a lot of people who play it with their kids as a reading tool, you know, that when kids, you know, so there are a lot of kind of, you know, grade school and middle school kids who play Epic Tavern. And I'm always mindful of that when I write it. I'm not writing it as a kid's story, but mm-hmm. I'm aware of the fact that kids are going to be, you know, that there are going to be some people who are sitting with their kid on their lap while their child is reading the text out loud to them.
Yeah.
So I don't want to put anything in there that would be awkward, you know, that, you know, you wouldn't want a child, you wouldn't want your kid reading to you. So I just focus on great storytelling and try to avoid things that are, you know, potentially problematic. And, you know, it's a crazy fantasy world. You don't have to, you know, you can still get, you know, pretty dark without, you know.
Yeah, we were talking about that originally. Yeah, we were talking about that originally when we first started kind of doing this, and we were saying how you know, we both kind of were on that, even myself when I was drawing it, I know some of it is kind of weird and I have monsters in it and stuff like that, but I think what we did really well with this book is we gave it that nice little tightrope between it not being a corny, like, you know, Disney film.
Mm-hmm.
But not being, you know, Saw. You know what I mean?
Right.
And,
right.
And yes, and that can be, that can
we're
be,
we're having every female character obviously contorted around to show off everything all the time.
Which exactly. You wanted to be respectful of the people who were playing it and respectful to the characters and respectful to everything.
Respectful to the characters.
And in this world, you know, in this world, if it's going to be some sort of grounded world, you want to make it that way. So you don't want to kind of over glamorize all these things. But I think that was one of the, as an artist, that was one of the things that I kind of, it wasn't a challenge, but I liked the idea that, okay, because my art, I think, kind of lends itself to the story very, very well in that sense, that we're not trying to overdo it. Cause I've had, you know, people, you know, that's the thing. I have a child too, and I want my child to read my comics and stuff like that, you know, and look at my work. Even though my daughter is always like, "Daddy, why are you always drawing monsters? Why don't you draw anything like unicorn or something?" You know, but she does enjoy some of the stuff I do, the goofy stuff. And I think that, you know, knowing that I can give this to my daughter, or grade school kids can read it and play the game, I think is also just opening up another door for readers. And I'm really happy about that too. I mean, I know Black Caravan has a lot of stuff that can be pretty out there, but I have nothing against that. I think, like, you know, Cherry Blackbird is an amazing comic, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's a great comic. Mm-hmm. You know, but we're kind of,
but that opening is something.
Yeah,
exactly. My first issue starts with a bang.
Yeah, yes, it does.
Literally.
but we're trying to kind of take that fantasy element and just kind of make it into something that literally it's its own thing but still fits in that realm of the Black Caravan label.
Yeah, no, I think it fits nice. It definitely has the, I don't know, there's, it's whimsical in a sense that, yeah, no, I would have no problem showing this to my daughter at all. But at the same time, you know, it's something that I, as an adult, have no problem reading guilt-free by myself. Right. You know,
it's the same approach I have at Epic Tavern, in that it's not written for children, but it's appropriate for them.
Yeah.
That's the way I approach it. Yeah. And I'm always writing it with, you know, I write what I want to read. You know, that's just by default, you know, so my target audience is 50-year-old men who are me. but I try to also, you know, and I think sometimes there can be an inclination to try and go overly, you know, gritty or shocking or that sort of thing without considering what it costs you to do that. Mm. And is your project better off for, you know, and sometimes the answer is yes. You know, I've certainly done horror stories that were pretty intense and that was the right move. But this is the kind of comic that we could have, for really no gain of our own, gone darker with.
Yeah.
And alienated a lot of potential readers without really gaining anything for it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Just to be a little edgy for an audience that you already had, just a smaller part of it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I like the direction you went there. I really did. You know, I feel like I'm not saying there's enough out there. I mean, I still want people to create balls to the wall craziness. No doubt about it.
Oh, yeah.
I love that.
Absolutely.
But I don't feel like there's enough balance to this level out there now. And that's another reason why this book is important. It is. This is an important book. It's something special with comics, guys. It really is. I hope you realize what it is. I don't know if you guys are going to get the chance to go on the con circuit at all this year to celebrate this book, but I have a feeling it's going to be very well received.
We're hoping that maybe 22 be go to some shows and things like that. You know,
this year was
very, I don't blame you.
Yeah.
Not like there's a whole lot of options anyway. So it's,
But
when that contour does come for you, I really do believe that you're going to be overwhelmed with handshakes. I do.
The thing that's going to be fun now is that, conventions have totally changed since I started writing games, because now if I'm going to be at a convention, selling the comic, I'll have Epic Tavern playing on. You could just sit and play it at our booth too, you know? So you could do a much more fun thing where you're not just here buy my shit, you know, to everybody who walks by. You can go here, just sit and play and enjoy the game and, you know, have some fun. Conventions become much more fun when you have a game experience to offer that you're asking nothing for in return. It just changes the interaction, and then people want to support you and buy what they can on their way out. But you don't have to feel like you're pushing that. So it's a real advantage, not just in terms of, I think, helping with sales maybe a little, but in terms of the experience and the toll it takes on you to not have to be pitching all the time.
Yeah, and I think that's something that me and Sean have both, I think, in just our conversations with each other. That's something that at conventions we've kind of talked about, is that, you know, you have the guy that's like jumping in front of the booth, and he's like, hey, buy this. He's like throwing books at you and stuff.
Can I take your picture holding my comic? You know, that guy?
Yeah.
He's selling a used car or something. And it's like, and we don't want to be those people, because we're not those people. We want you to genuinely, if you genuinely come to, and that's the thing, that's why I love conventions so much, is that I genuinely love talking to people. And even if it's not even about the stuff I'm selling, just in general, to have a conversation with somebody about art and about pop culture and about the stuff that they like, to me is just, it's fantastic. I love that interaction with the kind of like-minded people. And I don't know. And I'm really looking forward to this now that we have, I did Granite State a few weeks back, and I had the preview there, and people were very interested. And it was just great seeing their reaction to it. And it was very rewarding in the sense of that our enthusiasm is coming out in it. So when this thing drops, I'm going to be nonstop yapping about it.
It's going to be busy. Yeah.
It's going to be pretty busy.
As well you should too, because this is definitely something to be excited about. You guys, like I said, you really do have something special here. It's not just a great comic that you're making. It's just all the different new ways you're going about bringing it to life. I mean, it's on so many different levels and layers. This comic is so many different things. So I can't wait to see what this comic actually does when it hits the market and the masses get a hold of it. I don't know, man. I'm looking forward to seeing how many printings this thing goes into. You know, it's this is fun stuff, guys. Honestly, as a reader and a fan, thank you, because this is going to spark all types of just newness from all other creators. And even if there's a bunch of people that try to copy what you did here. And there will be. There's going to be a bunch of people that are going to try to copy what you did here. There's no doubt about it. Clash of Taverns or what? Clash of Clans or whatever the fuck those games are. They're going to be hitting up fucking IDW in no time going, I want the goddamn Mythic Tavern money. And it's coming, seriously. But I don't think that's not a bad thing. Because once again, it's bringing more people from one fan base into another, and we don't have to have this fucking divide of, oh, you're a video game nerd, you're a comic book nerd. No, we like the same shit.
You just love a good story.
We're just fans, and I don't know, man. This is
and we also have the nice, like the D&D RPG aspect
not to mention like, all of that as well, like the glaring obvious fan base that's 100% going to be into this. I mean, I don't even know how I didn't mention that. Probably because it's just the low-hanging fruit. I mean, it's going to be coming from all angles, guys. I can't. I'm excited for you. I'm gonna keep saying that, but that's because I mean it. Do you guys have social media handles where the people can follow you? I know you do.
Yeah, Tales from the Fantastical Crimes Unit is on Facebook.
I love it. I know you.
You can find me on Twitter as the Sean French, and Epic Tavern is on all the channels. The easiest way to reach the Epic Tavern crew is we do Twitch streams every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Just look for us on there. We stream development of the game and answer questions and talk. And then every Thursday on Discord, our Epic Taverns, we do a dev chat, just an open audio chat with myself, Tomo Moriwaki, who is the creative director of Spider-Man 2, and whoever shows up. And we talk game design, we talk storytelling, whatever people want to talk about that day, every Thursday on Discord. you can just pop in and talk. It's a small group, low pressure, and just to hang out. And Tomo's a, you know, one of the best game designers ever. I mean, he's wow. legendary. He's worked on, you know, every great franchise. And he's wow. just there to answer questions for people who, you know, once a week. So that's a ton of fun. Steve, where can that's people awesome. Find you?
Yeah, and I'm at Steve Motto Art on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, you know, all that fun stuff. And yeah, and sometimes I'll pop into the Twitch thing, and you know, I yeah, Tomo is a brilliant man. So kind of just listening to him talk, him and Sean, my brain just melts sometimes. It's just like, wow, I don't know, Jack. but they're really smart guys, and I'm just really happy to be around them, because it makes that's the thing too. You don't want to be the smartest person in the room, right? And I think
it'll drive you mad.
Like, yeah, and the thing is,
not only and when you're young, anywhere, but it drives you mad.
When you're young, that is an experience that feels good for your ego, so you kind of want to seek it out. But it can be really destructive, because you end up with people who don't challenge you or push you or anything. And that's one of the things I love about Hyperkinetic, is I'm always the dumbest guy in the room. Like, it's just everybody there are these brilliant engineers and, you know, just massive experience with AAA. And I just feel like I'm always a little bit over my head, which is like a really good place to be creatively, you know?
Yeah, no, that's those are very wise words that I hope the listeners don't take loosely. I mean, because that's... I mean, being a creator, you don't want to be like, even beyond being the smartest person, you don't want to be the most talented person in the room. I mean, you just constantly want to just surround yourself with people that are better than you. Yeah. And I don't know. I like that you brought that up, Steve. That's wise, man.
It's one of those things that's been through my whole career of me learning how to be better at my craft. Is that you always, there's always something else. There's always a better artist. There's always a better storyteller. And you just try to be the best that you can be. You know what I mean? I mean, we all have our influences. We all have the artists that we, you know, I'm a huge Jeff Darrow fan. Mm. I've met him on an occasion, and he was just so awesome. But it was funny, because he was so, you know, he was, I don't want to say insecure, but like, you know, he's like, oh, I just do this. I just do what I do. You know what I mean? It's like, you just do what you do. It's like, you've done stuff for like the Matrix and, you know, major movies, Dune, and like, you know what I mean? Like stuff like, I mean, and you do these great comic books, and you just kind of like, you know, like, well, I try, but it's never the best. It's never like, it's never what I really see in my head. And it's like, wow, that's crazy. So to hear stuff like that coming from somebody who you look at as the master, as it's just, it's interesting. And it's always one of those things where, yeah, I think there's always room for improvement. Even if you're at your highest level, you can always learn something new and get a different take from it. So, and I think that's what happens with a lot of artists too, is that sometimes they get to a point and it's like, you know, they don't want to learn anymore. And, you know, life is just about learning, and, you know, you don't really know everything until, I guess, you're finished. But,
yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Hey, honestly,
working with them has been awesome. Working with, like I said, I can't, you know, thank Joe and all them for, you know, hooking me up with Sean and doing this book, because it really it's created a little that extra spark of creativity that you know that definitely has shown. So
that's awesome, man. This really has been one of my favorite conversations this year, guys. And I've done
it's been fun.
Quite a few of these. This is there's just, I got so much out of this, because I mean, like I said, I'm not in the video game world. So to have that come in, and just, I mean, everything just opened up for me just now. Like to know, I don't know, like all of the stuff that I've been gushing about for the last almost 90 minutes now. I don't know. Like, groundbreaking really is the key word in this podcast, because you guys are doing things that I don't know. I didn't see possible. You know, I mean, I'm not looking towards these things, because I don't have that creativity in me that you guys do, but it's, I don't know, man, really as a not as a reader, thank you, because it's all getting ready to change in great ways because of you guys in this book. And I really do mean that. This is good. This is great stuff. All right, guys, I think I've kept you on the line long enough. I know you guys have amazing things to continue to create. We need issue 2 and 3. And how long are you guys going to go with this? 5 issues on the first series?
Well, we do have a story arc, right? You need the story arc that we kind of plan out for what, Sean? 4?
Yeah, it's 3 or 4. Cool. We'll kind of see whether we want to do that third story. Maybe it's, you know, maybe it's a 2-part. Maybe it's a little bit longer. You know, it's a question of whether we want to go to a trade after 3 issues or 4.
Understood.
If we go to a trade after 3, then maybe we do a third issue that's a little bit longer, and you know.
Yeah.
So who knows? But yeah, I think three or four is kind of the target area we're looking at right now. And one of the advantages of each story kind of being its own standalone thing is that we're not crazy rushed to get the next one out. People can enjoy the story start to finish in the first issue. That's a full case that you can read the conclusion of, and it's fully settled. And the next issue will be another full case, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think that helps too, and alleviates a little bit of the pressure to you don't have readers that are annoyed waiting to find out the rest of the story. You're leaving them at a satisfying place with each issue.
I dig it, man. I dig it. Once again, just wise marketing on top of all of the other brilliant things that are happening with this book. All right, fellas, really, it has been an absolute pleasure chatting with you. And I'm fairly certain this will not be the last time we'll be chatting on this show, because this was a lot of goddamn fun. And I know this is just the tip of the iceberg for what's to come with you guys. I can't wait to talk to you when you're all super massively successful and too busy to come on this podcast. And I'm having to beg you. I can't wait.
Yeah, when I have a fur coat and gold teeth and I'll just be
it's like, coming. I mean,
I'll look like Cameron. Yeah,
pink, I can see it now. oh man, I dig it. I dig it. Well, fellas, really, thank you so much for all of your time, and
thank you.
We'll be chatting soon. You guys stay safe.
Yeah, we'll definitely send over the colored lobby scene. Thanks, Brian. Appreciate it.
Oh yeah. Oh, I can't wait to see that, man. I can't wait. I'm so excited. All right, fellas. Well, we'll be talking soon. Cheers.
Catch you next time.
In a world of utter randomness, one podcast stood out from the bunch, and it was The Amazing World of Talking Shiz.
Sorry, I had to clear my throat there. It's just mainly randomness.
And focus is definitely not being focused on at all.
No. Our podcast is definitely no theme at all. It's literally random and talk about literally everything and throwing in random jokes at any given time.
Yeah. We're on Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. So go ahead, tune in. New episodes weekly.
And we're international.
International.
Very, very well. So tune in. Follow us on Twitter. See you there.
Well, there you have it. Another episode in the books. Another couple of creators, consider them cornered. Epic Taverns, Tales from the Fantastic Crime Unit. This looks amazing, people. And like I said, it's coming out of Scout, so it's gonna be good. It's gonna be good. I'm not a video gamer, and I talked all about this in the, you know, you heard me talk all about it. But regardless, I'm into it, man. I'm into it. It just sounds like a hell of a whole lot of fun, and yeah, I think you should check it out, too. I do. That's why I brought him on to talk about it, you know? I wouldn't steer you wrong, people. All right, so there you go. Remember to pre-order this book through your local comic book shop, Epic Taverns Tales from the Fantastical Crime Unit, and, I don't think you're going to be disappointed. I really don't. Amazing team behind this. All right, remember, head on over to podchaser.com after you're done adding this to your pull list, and leave a review for this episode, or even the podcast in general if you haven't already. Reviews for podcasts, it's almost as good as money. Reviews, there's just so much potential behind a review, so yes, don't be afraid. Do it on podchaser.com or Apple Podcasts or wherever the hell you listen. And if you can, leave a review. But if you listen on like Spotify or you can't, then head on over to Podchaser and leave that damn review. All right. That's going to do it. As always, remember to check out 307nerdsforever.com and use code CHEERS at checkout to save yourself 10% off their amazing stock of comics. And yeah, I'll talk to you the next time there's things about comics to talk about. In the meantime, I command that you stay safe and read responsibly. Cheers, you fuckers.
Hi, you're listening to Cheers to Comics podcast.
Hey everyone, I'm Monty Michael Moore, and this is the Cheers to Comics podcast with Brian Wayne.
This is Drew Zucker. You're listening to Cheers to Comics podcast.
This is Mark Russell, and you're listening to the Cheers to Comics podcast.
Podcast recommendations, you ask? Brian Wayne here, co-curator of The Apocalypse. And I know that sounds gnarly. That's because it is gnarly, man. The Apocalypse. What is The Apocalypse? The Apocalypse is a culmination of the gnarliest podcast, independent podcast, the internet has to offer. So instead of trying to go to Twitter the next time you need a new podcast to listen to and try to get Twitter famous, podcast recommendations, please. Just think The Apocalypse, man. And it's ironic because The Apocalypse is only the beginning. It's only the beginning. Just go to podchaser.com. It's in the top list. The top list in the whole world. So whether you're looking for true crime, sports, role-playing, I don't know, anything. Think of a podcast. It's on The Apocalypse. It's like The Apocalypse with a D. And do not forget to follow The Apocalypse on Twitter as well. Once again, that is The Apocalypse. If you're looking for a podcast recommendation, The Apocalypse is sure to have something for you. Good morning. Brian Wayne here to tell you about my new podcast, The Real Brains. The Real Brains podcast is a show coming out daily, dedicated to the everyday struggle of just the average human being. From troubles with rage to anecdotes about very strange human interactions, this podcast really is just a somebody that's all too familiar with the struggle. I'm here to let you know that you are not alone, so come laugh at our pain together. Every single weekday, every place you can catch a podcast. Check out The Real Brains with Brian Wayne. Remember, stay sane.